Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
Let's talk about something small, very small. Small enough that most copywriters are forced to overlook it most of the time. Because we've all been trained to think in terms of big persuasive assets, the sales letter, long form VSL, the case study, the big story that carries the whole argument. And those things still matter. But that's not what most of us are writing most of the time. Most of the time we're writing in tight spaces, openings, transitions, subject lines, YouTube ads, or Facebook ads, leads, things like that. Now, we think about those things for sure, and we worry about those things, and we obsess over those things, but rarely do we think that we have room to tell a whole story in those cramped, constrained spaces. Well, recently I've been workshopping a new book called MicroStories, and Nathan, you know, before we turned on the recording, you and I were talking about, is it, you know, just a different version of the persuasion story code? And the answer is yes and no. It's a next step, and it's about really compressed persuasion. See, I keep noticing in my own work and the work of other copywriters, sometimes the smallest fragments, smallest narrative fragments, we're doing the heaviest lifting, stories that were just one sentence or maybe two lines. And that small fragment would establish credibility or soothe an objection or even shift a belief, all without announcing itself as a story. So I'm going to share some of my early work on the new book today, stuff you can use right away, right after I remind you that copy is powerful and you're responsible for how you use what you hear in this podcast. And most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. All right, so today we're going to just get real, roll up your sleeves and hands-on stuff. Seven different types of persuasion stories, which I discovered as I was working on the new book. Now, most people hear the word story and they assume it means hero's journey, narrative, character, plot. And even if you've read my book, The Persuasion Story Code, front to back, multiple times and memorized it, you may still think of stories as being at least a few short paragraphs long. But times are changing. Things are getting more rushed than ever. And these days, the thing is, time is tight, tight, tight. Eventually, in the sales process, throughout the funnel, you may get oodles of space to make your case and close the sale, but not at first. These days, most of the time, you only get a few lines to get attention and make a connection, and sometimes you get as little as one sentence. And yet, inside that small space, something still has to move. Someone has to be persuaded of something, and that's where micro stories come in. A micro story is a compressed tale that sometimes implies more than it states, and yet it still seems to get the job done. Sometimes it actually does a better job than the longer version, which was intended to do the same thing. For example, one kind of micro story can carry an entire history without a timeline. Another kind can carry proof without using statistics. A third kind can carry an explanation without turning into a lecture. Each kind of microstory does a very specific job. It doesn't do everything, but you don't need it to. You need to do one thing and to do it well. I'll tell you what it is, show you one, and even explain how you can build one of these little convincers yourself. So let's get into it. Any thoughts before we jump in?
Yeah, so I have noticed when selling to like ultra high net worth audiences, they do not tolerate wasted time. If you go on in a story that takes three paragraphs, by the time they get halfway through the first one, they're like, okay, my time is more valuable than this. And I have always liked about your writing the fact that you can still convey what most copywriters get across in three paragraphs. You can get it across in two sentences. And I think that the higher level, the higher income level of your market, the more important what we're talking about today is.
So you're saying they don't get really turned on by a story about a guy who didn't finish third grade and drove a garbage truck, and then he discovered Okay, I gotcha. All right, so thank you for that. I appreciate it. Yeah, I've always been that way, and it's true. You know, the higher up the income scale and the wealth scale, net worth scale you go, the more people really value their time and are picky about how they're going to spend it, whether it's reading an ad or anything else. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into the first type of a micro story, the origin and track record micro story. Prospects always have the same question for you after you make a claim. Why should I believe you? Now, in today's time-starved world, a compact way to handle this is with an origin and track record micro story. That's a story as short as one sentence that does as much of the work as paragraphs and paragraphs of credentials used to do. It combines mentioning an event at one point in time, an origin, with your track record over time in relation to that event. So let me break this down to you. When you reference the moment of the origin of an idea, a method, a business, you are positioning this event in time, happened at a specific moment. Then when you reference the track record over time since that event, you are positioning the track record in terms of results. And time plus results together create credibility without making you sound defensive or making your prospect feel suspicious. So let's look at an example. Let's say your business, your job, is to help people fix direct response control packages, those sales letters that have won their place because they beat everything else. If someone says, "Why should I trust you to help me with my control?" you could give a lot of reasons and case studies and statistics, or you could simply say, "In 2002, a control I trusted stopped working, and I've been studying why this happens ever since." Mm. Boom. No, it's not a complete resume, and you might need to give more detail later. But the important thing to notice is you've completely established the foundation of credibility in one 15-word microstory. And there are two parts. The origin, this sets the microstory origin in 2002, and the track record, ongoing studies since then, which would be 24 years. They'll do the math. You don't have to. It's pretty simple, but very powerful. And in one sentence, you've suddenly catapulted yourself into the qualified to do this club. There's something implied in this kind of story, because in listing accomplishments, instead of doing that, you're mentioning a specific point in time when things changed, and the ongoing study you committed implies experience, testing, and accrued wisdom. And this works because readers are skeptical. They discount adjectives and self-description. But when you give them the right narrative fragment in a micro story, they process that differently. You're not asserting authority, you're signaling it by demonstrating it indirectly. Another way to look at this is you're placing your method or offer inside a lived timeline, and the timeline does the heavy lifting. So here's a template for this. When I first encountered specific problem event at a point in time, and name the point in time, I realized insight, and I've been working on it ever since. Needless to say, this kind of microstory works best when it is specific and true. And when you get this right, an origin and track record microstory lowers resistance. And maybe the best thing about these stories is they reassure without using an argument.
We've talked about before on the show how over-explaining actually signals insecurity, and what this does is the exact opposite. It signals security. I don't have to go into it. I'm just making a declaration, and that simple declaration instills confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. So it does show that you're a lot more confident than if you have to insecurely, you know, bleed out like a sheep all of the things that you've done. All right. Type 2, problem discovery microstories. A problem discovery microstory captures the moment when someone recognizes something isn't working. These days, attention is compressed, so you tell your story in a compressed way, and a problem discovery microstory is a great way of getting your reader to open their mind to the possibility of a problem existing without getting in their face about it. Because you tell your own story. You begin with a moment of awareness of a problem, followed by a discovery, which leads to a realization. And this type of microstory usually starts when there's friction. For example, an email that didn't convert, a launch that didn't go well, copy that fell flat. But instead of diagnosing it analytically, you show the moment you became aware of the problem. Here's why that's so powerful. It lets the reader see themselves in your story without them feeling like you are accusing them, or anyone else for that matter. See, when you tell someone that they have a problem, they get defensive. But if you show a scene they recognize, they will fill in the blanks for themselves in their own mind. Suppose you're trying to sell copywriters on reading copy out loud. Everyone agrees that it's a good idea, but almost no one does it. You could simply sell it through this microstory. I thought the copy was strong myself until I read it out loud. The reader feels that because you're not venting or dramatizing. You're shining a spotlight on the turning point, the moment when something became clear to you. That clarity is persuasive because it feels earned. Now, don't just make shit up, because the strength of this type of microstory depends on authenticity. So here's the template. I believed, assumption, until a specific moment of friction.
I want to double down on one thing. I experienced this. I was the one that was in the wrong, or I was the one that was dealing with the pain. By doing that, me, the reader, I don't get defensive. If you're saying, you probably think your copy is great, but you should read it out loud and see how horrible it sounds. Now all of a sudden, I'm on the defensive, I'm against you, you're an enemy. By flipping it and making it really simply, hey, I realized that when I read my copy out loud, it didn't sound nearly as good as it did when I looked at it on paper. I'm like, oh, I can relate with that without feeling attacked, without feeling like you're my enemy.
Yeah, I mean, you have to swallow your pride a little bit to do this, experience a little humility, but if results and persuasion is what you're after, it's a price you should be willing to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All right. Type 3, mechanism reveal microstories. This is the microstory that explains why something works, but it doesn't explain it like a lecture. It reveals the mechanism in a dramatic way through a moment. This is important, not a technical way, rather in a way that the reader can experience it in their own mind, in the visualization of a single moment or event. Why or how something works, of course, is what we call a mechanism. A mechanism reveal microstory compresses that mechanism into an event that occurs during a moment in time. So the reader doesn't just learn of something that works, they see why. And when people see the cause, belief increases. Now, a mechanism may involve more steps and cover more ground in reality than what you cover in this kind of microstory. But all you do is isolate the breakthrough insight, the moment the hidden variable was discovered. Let's say you did something with a piece of copy and the response jumped way up. This could be your microstory. We changed one headline simply by adding a concrete number in place of a vague promise, and response immediately increased 15%. There's an important constraint here I want to go over again. You're not revealing the entire method, just enough to make the story impressive and meaningful. This is a very simple but powerful form of proof in the form of cause and effect. And when the readers understand cause and effect, their resistance softens. And that makes everything that follows easier to accept.
I think this particular type of micro story works best with a market that's already tried other options and they've failed and they can't figure out why. And then by hinting at or giving a tiny piece of here's what actually works, they get that aha moment and then suddenly they're willing to try again.
Right. They're like Pavlov's dog. They're panting. They want more. And so they'll buy. Okay. I guess offers are like meat powder, huh? All right. The type four is belief-shifting micro-stories. This is very powerful. It's the micro-story that can change what the reader thinks is true by repositioning. A belief-shift micro-story isolates the moment when an old assumption stopped making sense and a new one replaced it. Because belief can shift when reality contradicts it. And when you can compress that contradiction in a believable way into a micro-story, you've got one that shifts belief. Here's the big idea. Instead of saying, most people understand this, you reference the moment you misunderstood it, or the moment a client did. The story becomes the pivot. The mistake people make is trying to use logic to make the old belief fall apart by arguing about it. But that doesn't work so well. What works great? By showing the old belief failing. Mm-hmm. That failure creates space, and in that space, the new belief somehow feels more real. You have to be careful not to use techniques that you may be in the habit of using, like mocking the old belief or ridiculing people who hold it. Instead, you acknowledge that the old belief once seemed reasonable, and then you show the moment when it stopped being reasonable. Doing it this way makes it much less likely that your prospect will get defensive, because the shift feels natural, almost inevitable. Suppose you're trying to convince someone that long copy works better than short copy. You could simply say, I used to think shorter copy always converted better. Then I cut a sales letter in half and I watched the response drop. Well, the conclusion is pretty obvious, even though you're not stating it outright. You're not lecturing. Instead, you're narrating a correction. Belief shift microstories can prepare the ground for a new way of thinking. They help the reader step away from their previous position.
Mm. I think this one also touches on what we were talking about earlier, where your copy, if you're not careful, especially if you're taking a contrarian point of view, can make the reader feel attacked. And this is a way to change their held belief without making them feel attacked.
I think that's so important. You know, people get very fervent about their beliefs, and sometimes when someone's trying to change a belief, they will attack, you know, the other person, thinking that's going to work. And it's really, they're just venting their own frustration, but it's not a very skilled way of persuading. It doesn't work very well.
And I will say, I have been guilty and caught myself doing this before.
Me too. Yep, that's how we learn. All right, fifth type is contrast microstories. This is so simple. This is a microstory built on comparison, before and after, or this way and that way, or what most people do versus what actually works. But it's not presented as a list. It's presented as a moment. A contrast microstory compresses differences into a single sentence or two. It's all based on a simple but little known powerful psychological fact. The human mind understands difference faster than description. I think this goes back to really primordial days. You know, you could have a saber-toothed tiger and someone could come back and they could talk about it, or they could talk about it when they're out in the field, or some bushes start to rustle when all the other ones are still, and you notice that right away and you realize something's dangerous. The human mind understands difference. The rustling brush when the other brush isn't rustling faster than description. So if you make a single statement by itself, it may be interesting, but it's rarely all that meaningful. But if you place that same thing next to its opposite or next to something that's different, it can become meaningful and memorable. That's what this type does. Here's an example. One headline promised better marketing. The other headline promised an increase of at least 27%. And the second headline was the one that pulled better. So instead of saying most marketing is vague, you show the difference between vague copy and copy which includes a specific. then your point, which is to include specifics, becomes meaningful and memorable. You make a change in framing, and the contrast's got to feel real. Something the reader would be familiar with from their own life experience. Contrast microstories can speed up understanding and acceptance of a key premise. But what's really great about them is they compress what could take pages of explanation into a sentence or two. And when time is of the essence, this is an essential kind of microstory.
If I could add anything to this, it would be the impact of the contrast. When I describe something, I'm asking them to compare the new state to the baseline. This is love versus this is feeling meh. But when I compare love to heartbreak, or when I compare pleasure to extreme pain, then it's a much more impactful thing. So instead of just explaining it and hoping that they look at it from the baseline, giving them the contrast on the other side makes it much more impactful.
It absolutely does. Yeah, a good point. All right, type 6, objection diffusing microstories. This is a microstory that handles resistance without arguing. You know, in sales, there are elaborate ways developed for you to counter objections from prospects. There's the LAER formula: listen, acknowledge, explore, respond. Then there's the AIAA approach: acknowledge, isolate, answer, ask. And the 4 P's: pause, probe, provide, persuade. And of course, feel, found, feel, forget. You know, I used to feel the same way, but then I found, and now I feel. Okay, these can all work, but people are used to them. They've heard them before, and they immediately put up their guard when you start to jump into that kind of stuff. A microstory might seem more authentic and does not raise suspicions the way a canned sales technique does. An objection-diffusing microstory anticipates the objection. Then it neutralizes it through a brief narrative fragment. Of course, the crudest way of handling objections is to argue with your prospect, a verbal form of arm wrestling. And the problem with this is, when you argue head-on, people brace, they defend. If they have a choice, they don't feel very good about saying yes to you. But when you tell a story where an objection surfaced and got resolved, people feel more comfortable. And that's the function here. An objection-diffusing microstory isolates the instant someone hesitated and shows what happened next. Not with a lecture, but with a scene. For example, instead of saying, "You may think this looks too simple to actually work," you could reference the moment someone else assumed that, like this: "He said it looked too simple, but he tried it anyway, and it worked." The formula is simple: state the objection, tell about a small test, and describe the result. Just like that. Again, because this is so crucial, you are not confronting the reader, you're showing them a mirror. Keep the story compact, one or two beats, moment of doubt, moment of clarification. That's enough. Anything longer starts to feel like persuasion instead of observation. So, next time you can anticipate an objection and you'd like to resolve it before it even comes up, try this.
I would only add, validate the objection. If you keep hearing an objection over and over, this would be a great tactic. Don't create an objection that doesn't exist yet, though.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a fine line. You don't want to go out of your way trying to be overly cautious about objections. But if there's something that comes up all the time, you know it's going to come up. You can try this. All right. I think I saved the best one for last. It's identity reinforcing microstories. And this is a microstory that strengthens how the reader sees themselves. Really important here, this is not flattery or praise or criticism. It's recognition, plain and simple. An identity reinforcing microstory reflects back a version of the reader that aligns with how they see themselves and also helps them reach the decision you want them to make. And it's based on an important psychological truth: people act in ways that are consistent with who they believe they are. So instead of pushing behavior directly, you reinforce the part of their identity that makes the behavior natural. This type of microstory captures a moment when someone acted in accordance with that part of their identity. You're not arguing that the reader is smart or disciplined. You're simply shining a light on when someone refused to settle. And in that refusing, the person in the story is asserting their identity. You could be talking about how someone created a control, and your entire microstory could be, she didn't guess, she tested. The story implies her identity as a professional who asks the market what they prefer rather than arrogantly decides for it. And the reader, if they see themselves in that category, steps into alignment. The key to making this work is to reflect something the reader already suspects about themselves. Because when people feel a choice confirms who they are, resistance drops. This type of microstory makes that confirmation visible. And when someone sees a decision that's consistent with who they are, they don't need convincing. They merely need an opportunity. So that's what this kind of microstory quietly provides.
I've got a four-word example of this. Okay. And it's for Jif peanut butter. Choosy moms choose Jif.
Yeah, and who doesn't want to be choosy if you're a mom, right?
Exactly. And that's just proof that this works even in four. I mean, think of a micro story shorter than four words, but it nails it.
I can't right now. I think you win the prize. Okay, now that's a really good example too. All right, let's recap it. Seven types today. I'm thinking we may need more types or more examples for a full book. I don't know. But like I said, I'm workshopping it. Got a lot more I need to say in the book than we covered here. But anyway, here's what we covered here. Number one, origin and track record microstories. And these compress history into a few lines, maybe ideally a sentence, that imply depth, experience, and durability. They build credibility indirectly by showing where something began and how it held up over time. Two, problem discovery microstories. They capture the moment a problem became undeniable. They create identification by letting the reader recognize themselves in a lived turning point. Three, mechanism reveal microstories. These expose the hidden cause behind a result. They increase belief by showing the gear turning instead of just claiming the outcome. Four, belief shift microstories. They isolate the instant an old assumption stopped working. They create persuasion by demonstrating a correction rather than arguing for one. Five, contrast microstories. These place two versions side by side in narrative form. They generate clarity by letting the reader feel the difference instead of being told about it. Six, objection diffusing microstories. These surface hesitation and resolve it through a brief story fragment. They lower resistance by reframing doubt rather than confronting it. And seven, identity reinforcing microstories. These reflect a self-image consistent with the desired action. They make decisions feel natural by aligning behavior with identity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I feel like you have to write a book about this now. This has been one of my favorite episodes in a long time that we've done together. If people want to get the persuasion story code, which is kind of what inspired this, you can check that out, or you can find a link to it in the show notes over at copywriterspodcasts.com. I will be working in the background, twisting David's arm to try and get this new concept put into a book as well, because this episode was just a teaser, and I don't know if it quenched my thirst, David. I think it just made my thirst even more thirsty. Copywriterspodcast.com. We'll have links to David's persuasion story code in the show notes, a bunch of other episodes as well. But man, this has been one of my favorite episodes in a long time.
Very cool. I'm glad you liked it. That's a good sign.
All right. Until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. Are you getting tired of using the hero's journey in your sales copy over and over again? My book, The Persuasion Story Code, will help you put together stories that convince your prospects and resolve their objections. If you are a copywriter, you'll appreciate that every single one of the 25 kinds of stories in this book have been proven time and time again in profitable sales copy. But I've also used these kinds of stories to close 5- and 6-figure deals for my own business, and so have many of my clients. These stories are easy to create and easy to tell. They sound like ordinary conversation, but they are all designed and proven to lead to a yes. You can get the Persuasion Story Code on Amazon.com. So get your copy today.